From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, Venezuela, and how one father and his son are making sense of a crisis. For this episode, we're going to turn to the political and economic crisis in Venezuela. Our producer, Sayer Quevedo, sat down with a Venezuelan father, Ernesto, and his son, José Eduardo. One of them is based in Venezuela, the other in New York City. Sayer Quevedo is going to take it from here.
Before we jump into this conversation, I do want to preface with a little bit of information about Venezuela. And of course, this is not the definitive history of the country by any means, but it is sort of basic information I think is important to know. So in the 1970s, Venezuela was considered the gem of Latin America. That's in part because Venezuela had oil, and a lot of it. Money brought in by the oil industry made Venezuela one of the wealthiest countries in the region.
The taxes on the oil paid by the companies have created great wealth. The money is being used by the government for the development of the entire country, but most noticeably in Caracas.
But the problem with having an economy built on oil is that when the price of oil drops, things tend to fall apart. And that's exactly what happened in the 80s in Venezuela. The price of oil fell and Venezuela went into an economic crisis. Soon, almost half the population was living in poverty. Massive protests erupted across the country, and the most infamous one is called the Caracazo.
Los primeros disparos fueron de advertencia, pero luego tiraron a matar.
It's reported that 300 were killed and thousands injured in these protests. In 1992, Hugo Chavez, who was a former paratrooper, attempted to overthrow the government of President Carlos Andrés Pérez. Chavez was imprisoned for about 2 years, but later was pardoned. He went on to run in the 1998 elections and won in a landslide.
En la misma frecuencia, en el mismo pulso del alma nacional. Nosotros representamos la esperanza del pueblo. Es ahí la explicación de nuestra popularidad.
Launching what he called the Bolivarian Revolution. And the Bolivarian Revolution was supposed to be exactly that, a total revolution. The government established free health care and redistributed farmland. And on an international level, the Venezuelan government rejected what they saw as neoliberal institutions like the World Bank, the IMF, and the United States government. Under Chavez, poverty rates dropped by more than half, but the homicide rate nearly doubled. Hugo Chavez stayed in power until his death in 2013.
Lo juro hoy 19 de abril por el legado eterno de los libertadores.
After Chavez's death, Nicolás Maduro, his vice president, stepped in and then went on to be elected as president of Venezuela. Since then, Venezuela has suffered massive hyperinflation.
A supermarket in Caracas, empty and hollow. Many shelves have been left empty as the country struggles to deal with its worst economic crisis.
Minimum wage in the country is equivalent to about $6 a month. A bottle of ketchup costs about $9, according to an LA Times article. Not only have prices radically escalated, there's also a shortage of basic necessities like food and medicine. Protests in response to those shortages have been met with violent crackdowns. 3 million people have left the country. In January, Maduro was inaugurated as president after a heavily contested election. So leading up to the election, Maduro's opponents were barred from running, they were put in jail, they were exiled. And so in response, the opposition-led National Assembly declared Maduro's presidency unconstitutional. And Juan Guaido, the head of the assembly, declared himself interim president of Venezuela.
Juro! Asumir formalmente las competencias del Ejecutivo Nacional.
The opposition calls for Maduro's removal because of his repression and corruption. Maduro says the crisis in the country is the result of U.S. sanctions with the ulterior motive of taking advantage of the country's bountiful oil industry. With so much in the news about Venezuela, we decided that it was important to hear from two people who are watching what's unfolding from both inside and outside of the country. They also happen to be father and son.
Alu.
Hello?
Uh-huh.
The son is Jose Eduardo. He's 28 years old and lives in Venezuela. We reached him by phone from his home in Maracay.
This has always been like these moments where you feel everything is like very down, very calm. And then, you know, people erupt out of nothing.
He's a journalist and a professor, and he's written for our website. In our studio in New York City is his father, Ernesto.
What is needed, you know, what is needed to bring, I know, bringing already medicines for the family and for
Ernesto
friends.
Originally left Venezuela in the 90s and now lives in New York City. He goes back to visit family every couple of years. Jose Eduardo and Ernesto allowed me to record a phone conversation between the two of them. Ernesto, the father, was preparing to visit his son, Jose Eduardo, and other family members in Venezuela for the first time in nearly 2.5 years. Both of them have been watching the situation with growing anxiety.
Bueno, Jose Eduardo, I think to understand a little more how is the situation on Venezuela at this moment, to understand how things have changed in the past 2.5 years, if it's still, the violence is still, you know, as high as I remember, I don't know. There are things that I should consider or think about it before taking off from New York and going to Caracas.
I don't know. I think when you live here and see things, it doesn't hit you as hard as someone who spends time not seeing Venezuela and then comes back and see it again. It's going to be, I think, a very hard blow for you in many aspects. Or at least that's the experience I have noticed people who visit every couple of years. Everything feels like a media machina, you know, going half capacity. It's just going through emotions for everyday things. And, you know, that's very hard. You see Iglesia Central de Venezuela, you see Plaza Arena, and, you know, the shadow of what they used to be. And that's very sad, you know. I especially people who had a past with Caracas, as you have, a Caracas that was a lively metropolis. So I can imagine it will be very difficult in that sense. I mean, how do you remember Caracas in the 80s and 90s, for example?
Well, for me, before all of this happened, before Chavez arrived to power, of course, there was a need of a change, a political change, because people were not paying attention to what the politicians were doing. So a lot of corruption. Carlos Andrés Pérez was generating the momentum for a person like Chavez to take power. And I think he is just the answer of the bad administration that spent, you know, years and years in Venezuela. And for me, Venezuela in the 80s was a paradise. But I will not say that I want Venezuela to go back to that paradise. I want Venezuela to learn from this experience and to move forward. I don't think it's going to be a new person that is going to come and fix it all. We used to walk on the street. We used to go to the movie theater. We used to go and go swimming and leave the car open. We used to fall in love and walk the streets. And, you know, I can feel, talking to my sister, the desperation, the destruction that this has generated. And I don't think it's right now the battle of the left or the right. It's just human being.
I agree, you know, and when I was teaching 2 years ago at a local college, most of my students, or all of my students, were born when Chavez became president in 1998, 1999. So they had like very little to no context or interest on what was before them. You know, and at first I was worried, but then I became hopeful because they want to build a new country. They want to build a new society, and, you know, they don't have this nostalgia, this entrapment with the past that you see in many politicians, in many, you know, people of certain age, that they all speak as if everything before Chavez was great, which wasn't. And that makes me hopeful about what things will come, what we may look from here in 20 or 30 years.
There is a moment of hope for the opposition, but what do you think about Juan Guaido? What is the feeling right now? Because it feels like it's been 2 years without any feeling that something will happen. So what do you think is changing right now?
It's very strange. You feel that you are in a historical moment, but regardless of what moment will turn out, you think there is no way back. So this is one of those, you know, resolution moments, definitive moments, and there is a lot of hope. I saw this demonstration of the opposition, all this group of people in the streets, and then I saw no one for the government, despite, you know, all these announcements that they will go out and also do their counter-protest, you know, there was no government presence, and that was, like, strange. But I also worry because there is also a lot of expectation of, you know, what will bring a political transition, what will Juan Guaido bring, etc. And I think that, you know, people are like overselling it. People are like expecting too much in too little time. And you have to be realistic. You have to know that whatever process comes to reveal Venezuela, it will take decades.
Definitely. And I was talking to some friends, you know, I'm friends with liberal tendency of left wing, if you want to call them, and they say that, you know, this is an intervention from the Trump government, from the United States, for the interest of the oil and all of that. And I feel, in a way, that at this moment, there is no, like, right or left wing. It's just like, this is a humane crisis. And the resolution of the United States government to give a hand to Venezuela, and I'm maybe naive about it, but I just want to think that it's also the interest to protect what the investment that they have next to Russia and China, but also it is because people are dying. People are in jail. People are being repressed. People are being suffocated.
You know, I have been talking with people from all sides about perspectives around this. It's more about ending the Maduro's government than any preoccupation about U.S. intervention. It's more about dealing with the humanitarian crisis than any sentiments about Trump. You know, I know a lot of people who don't support Trump, who are very critical about him, but, you know, they agree with what is going on from the U.S. to Venezuela. And that's something not many people understand, that we aren't fools. We know the U.S. has interests in Venezuela. You know, it's like Charles de Gaulle said, countries have no friends, they have interests.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue to hear from Ernesto and Jose Eduardo. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Castlemont High is different from a lot of other high schools.
This student, he got shot 4 times.
I was just standing outside and, like, heck of bullets.
He held the gun up to my head.
I'm Sam Sanders. 1 year after Parkland, we talk to kids who face gun violence every single day. Listen on It's Been a Minute from NPR. Hey, we're back, and we're going to continue to listen to the conversation between Ernesto and Jose Eduardo
a father and son from Venezuela, as they make sense of the crisis their country has been facing. Ernesto, the father, starts us off.
In 2007, I decided to go back to Venezuela because I felt that I want to reconnect with my country and I want to be a Venezuelan and be active again. And I did. I went down there for 3 years and saw like a possibility. I came back to New York in 2010 with my heart broken and my expectations gone. So at this moment in 2019, I'm married. I have my wife, Petra, amazing. A person who have guided me and helped me, my son Mateo, Jose Eduardo's half-brother, who have reestablished some of this love inside me for things like my country. That's why I'm going back to to see my father. That is maybe his last year, to see maybe possible a window of change in Venezuela, to see my mother, who's a strong woman, still fighting, and see if there's really a change, and see what will be next.
I just hope we can be a normal, stable, democratic country again, you know, with mechanisms that allow us to change government if we don't agree with the government. You know, a place where all of us Venezuelans of different kinds can be together and help each other to build a new, better country. I guess my fear is, you know, you drifting away. I have seen many people who, you know, who for them Venezuela is done, you know, Venezuela is through. There is no meaning in looking back to Venezuela. Venezuela is a good memory in the past, but no longer belongs to them. So I guess that's something I worry, you know, about you and many people, you know, 3 million Venezuelans that live abroad.
Yeah, but I think it's the love to Venezuela is bigger of even what we can say sometimes, you know, you and all my friends that are behind that decided to stay and not leave the country, they are part of my love and thoughts. And that's very difficult just to cut it and move and not remember anymore from where you're coming from.
You know, so many people who I studied with, I went to college with, are gone. Are in Spain, are in the United States, are in Chile, are in Ecuador, are in Colombia, are in Mexico, you know, and I will never have that sense of this is a place where people from my past live together.
Okay, hijo. It was beautiful and great to talk to you. I send you a big hug and I see you soon, yeah?
Muchas gracias, gracias por este rato, por este momento juntos.
Un abrazo, te quiero mucho.
Our thanks to José Eduardo and Ernesto. This episode was produced by Sarah Quevedo and edited by Sofia Palizaca. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Miguel Macias, Maggie Freeling, Antonia Cerejido, and Janice Yamoka, with additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Ruinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Oh, and one more thing, dear podcast listener. If you can take a moment to rate and review Latino USA, that really helps other listeners to find us. Also, keep your comments coming because they keep us super motivated. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, it might seem like Mexico is having a Hollywood moment with the recent success of Mexican directors and the film Roma. But Hollywood's obsession with Mexico goes way back. That's next time on Latino USA.